You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Motherhood isn't always apple pie and Hallmark moments. In case you didn't know, children can be difficult, at times impossible, and some a lot more than others. Pulitzer Prize winner Catherine Ellison's son was diagnosed with not only attention deficiency disorder, but also oppositional defiant disorder. As he approached the emotional Bermuda Triangle of adolescence, she decided the situation was about to become unbearable and she needed to take charge. So she wrote a book proposal. As a result, she spent a year paying attention to him, to his diagnosis, and to herself. Her new book, Buzz, tells that story. It's published by Voice, an imprint of Hyperion, and I'm very pleased that it has brought her to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you.
You call your son Buzz in this book. Is that his real name?
It's not. It's a nickname. It was part of the way that I worked to protect his privacy. He also has a different last name than mine, but I chose Buzz because of the way he affects me, which is like this electric jolt.
Is there a stigma attached to being diagnosed with ADD?
Sure there is. And despite all we've learned and all the awareness of learning disorders, these are things that families often don't talk about that much, and it leaves a lot of parents very isolated.
Now, I know something about autism, and if you put three autistic kids together, you have three kids who have very little in common other than the fact that they're autistic. Is that also true with ADD?
That's a great point, and that's true for everybody. Human brains are incredibly variable, and ADHD, think of the diagnosis as a very vague kind of a grab bag of things that can boil down to working memory problems, impulsiveness, disorganization. It's a bunch of different things.
So there is no specific list of symptoms.
There are.
I mean, how does somebody make a diagnosis? Do they have a checklist of 25
exactly.
And say, if you got 10 of them, probably ADHD?
That's correct. And think of it, it's a pretty subjective process, as it is with all mental illnesses.
Because I would think that one person might be called ADHD and the next kid might just be called rambunctious.
That's right. And this is part of the problem that so many parents are trying to sort out. I was extremely lucky to be able to have a book contract that allowed me to focus my attention on it. But
well, I was kind of making a joke about that, but that's actually true because you could, with the book contract, you had the wherewithal, you had the money to be able to do this?
Absolutely, and I could approach a lot of experts in the field as an award-winning reporter rather than a hysterical mom, which was a wonderful benefit.
And that is a problem for many people. It just means going on the internet and hoping to get some information that you can apply.
That's right. And what I think a huge problem for parents who are reinventing the wheel with each new diagnosis is that there's something that I call the ADHD industrial complex out there, which is not just the pharmaceutical billions of dollars in advertising, but also a lot of alternative remedies, quote unquote. You can have your hair follicles analyzed. You can go swimming with dolphins. You can buy a million different handbooks, and they're all supposed to cure ADHD.
This also allowed you to distance yourself from the personal pain by being able to look at it objectively and scientifically?
You got it. I had to put on my reporter's hat because I was getting very enmeshed and emotional about it, as I think was probably reasonable. I was incredibly worried about what would happen to my son and the road we were going down. So we became, rather than a mother helping her sick child, we became, to an extent, business collaborators.
There was concern some years ago that ADHD was becoming a popular diagnosis and any kid could be called ADHD.
There still is that concern. There's, according to the Centers for Disease Control, there's about 5.4 million kids with a diagnosis. I think a lot of kids are being overdiagnosed. But a big problem is some are not being diagnosed when they need it.
Is it mostly boys?
It is mostly boys, but one fascinating thing that they're finding is that while boys are being diagnosed at greater rates than girls in grade school, in adulthood, it's one-to-one.
One-to-one.
That's right.
So we can't say that it's something that happens in the brains of boys, which are structured a little differently than the brains of girls.
Well, what we can say is that it manifests differently. So boys will act out and get caught, while girls can slip under the radar because our whole way of being is to internalize things.
To some degree, we're pathologizing what a lot of boys do just as a normal part of being boys.
Well, in some cases, but I really want to stress that ADHD, when the diagnosis fits, is at root a neurobiological disorder with there's a lot of good research behind that.
Well, the reason I ask is also I think back to when I was a kid, and I suspect that a few of the kids that we thought were just a little odd were Asperger's or had some other condition, that maybe ADHD, but nobody was being diagnosed with this. We just lived our childhoods, and that kid was like that, and the other kid was like something else.
Sure, and the ADHD kids were called juvenile delinquents, and a lot more of them ended up in really bad places. I think that we've evolved a lot, and that's really great. On the one hand, we've got these labels, and nobody likes to be labeled, but there's a lot more resources out there that can be helpful.
Do parents tend to feel that it's their fault?
Yes, of course, and that's why it's such a lonely job. It's such a lonely job because you watch all these other happy families that seem to be having such a great time. And a lot of you get blamed a lot. I think there was a recent Roper poll that said that like about 50% of Americans think that learning disabilities just boil down to laziness and bad parenting. So, yes, we feel it's our fault unless we have different children with kind of different outcomes, and then we see.
Is there a genetic component?
Definitely a genetic component, and I go into that in the book. I have a great-grandfather who had the restlessness to get our family out of Poland, but then ended up going back to Poland to pick up a family inheritance and gambled it all away in Monte Carlo. So I can't diagnose him from here, but the story actually strikes a chord.
When did you first start to suspect that Buzz had a problem?
Well, he was diagnosed at age 9, and that's when his teachers started complaining that he was tuning out in class and he was losing a lot of things. And then I was diagnosed at age 48. So like so many parents, you ask if there's a genetic component. Like so many millions of parents around the world, I followed my son and got my own diagnosis, which was extremely helpful in understanding him.
And what about understanding yourself?
And myself, sure.
Had you had problems when you were a kid that you might now attribute to ADHD?
Absolutely. And I did things in my career, too. I mean, on one hand, I won a Pulitzer. On another hand, I was sued for $11 million for a careless mistake. So I had a real up and down kind of a life. And having the diagnosis was in a way, a great relief.
But then he also has something that's called oppositional defiant disorder. Is this related to ADHD? Is there a kind of a spectrum, or is this just another problem that you had to deal with?
Well, this is a very controversial diagnosis, as you might suspect. Doesn't seem to be biological, but the research shows that as much as 60% of kids with ADHD have this oppositional defiant disorder. And I really think it's the product of sticking them in environments where they make mistakes, they screw up, and they're told to try harder, or, you know, they're just getting a lot of negative feedback, and they turn that out against the world.
Well, you said he had a learning disability. Kids can have learning disabilities without being ADHD.
Of course. There's a whole lot of them.
Well, what was his problem?
Well, actually, you know how I said ADHD is sort of this grab bag. So one thing that was really useful in the book is that we took my son to a neuropsychologist. And this is one of the many stations of the cross that parents have to go through. You get testing, and what you get is like a map of this child's brain. So what we found was that he actually had some processing issues, executive function issues, disorganization, poor working memory. So all these things were so much more concrete than ADHD and so much easier to deal with.
My guest is Catherine Ellison, whose latest book is A Year of Paying Attention, a memoir. It is published by Voice, which is an imprint of Hyperion. How soon did the issue of whether you were going to use medications arise?
Well, medication obviously is the most controversial issue out there when it comes to these questions. I fought against it a lot. I'm the kind of mom who turns down the epidural twice. I mean, I didn't want these supposed poisons in my son's body. So I fought against it for quite a while. And I was also very distrustful as somebody who reads the news of all these reports about terrible side effects and supposedly you can get cancer, depression.
And overprescribing.
And overprescribing, right? So which does exist. So I was very, very cautious until we got up to a point where I just feel like I felt like we had to try something else. And my husband definitely agreed. So my son actually had a pretty good year on medication.
What was he taking?
He was taking Concerta. It's a form of Ritalin. And had a great year, but at the end of the year, he didn't want to take it anymore. And this is one of the things about medication that's not very available to the public. But on average, kids don't really stay on these meds for more than a year.
And the reason he didn't want to is because of the side effects?
Yeah, a lot of kids don't feel like they're themselves. He was having trouble sleeping as it was. We tried other types of medication, but it really is one example of the fact that meds are not – there's no silver bullet out there. That's the bad news. You know, there's no magic bullet that's going to fix your child immediately and make them, quote-unquote, normal.
And then there's always the fear that you're going to be on Ritalin or some version of it for the rest of your life.
Right.
And here you are 8 years old and you're starting a lifetime of taking this drug.
That's right. And, you know, in the book, I really do describe a lot of great alternatives.
Well, biofeedback
has a lot of great evidence behind it. Well, it doesn't, quote-unquote, cure ADHD, but it can help a lot with the anxiety and the irritability, that ODD thing. I think it really made a difference there.
On the other hand, it's incredibly expensive,
exactly.
And a lot of parents can't afford it.
That's right, and insurance companies don't cover it. But as more evidence comes in, and there's a lot of new evidence coming in from European studies, I think the insurance companies are probably going to come around.
You also went to a meditation retreat, but
that's
you
right.
went alone.
That's right.
Could you have brought Buzz to it?
Well, that's a fascinating question. I think that by the time I've actually gotten some people really asking me that, well, how could you go? Your family was in crisis. It was important at that point for my husband to step up a little bit and get more involved. I went on a 5-day silent retreat. And to me, it was really an indication. I was following through on something I feel deeply, which is that parents of kids in this situation have to be honest with themselves about what they are contributing to these constant conflicts. And for me, it was that my anxiety about my son was really getting out of hand, and it was leading to a lot of conflicts and making him feel bad. And I had to address that anxiety if I was going to really help him better. And the meditation helped a lot.
Could you have gotten him to meditate as well?
He did meditate. I talk in the book about how he went to a wonderful class for middle schoolers. And it was so smart the way they did this. They had the kids run around the room and play what they called Dharma Tag before they sat and meditated.
Now, you mentioned your husband. A lot of marriages break up as a result of this kind of situation, don't they?
Yeah, and there's research. This is really interesting. There's research that shows that you get about twice as many divorces when you have a child who's got this diagnosis. But you can't necessarily blame it on the child because often one of the parents has ADHD, and that can be a real cause.
But you had a younger son, and I assume he felt a bit of a victim. I've seen kids in that situation. All the attention is paid to the ADHD kid. This kid is doing perfectly fine and feels neglected.
Well, I put a lot of attention on that relationship because I could see ways in which my younger son, being the quote-unquote perfect child, was teasing the older son so that he could be more of the angel and make my older son more of the devil. It was important to look closely at that relationship.
What about some of the other things that people suggest? Gluten-free diets, vitamins of one sort or another. Recently, I heard that people are using medical marijuana to treat ADHD.
I actually wrote a story about medical marijuana being prescribed in California for adolescents with ADHD, and I wrote it for the New York Times. It's on my website, by the way. But I don't think that that's necessarily a wonderful idea. Obviously, a lot of kids with ADHD get very anxious, and in that moment, the marijuana can help them get less anxious, but it's not a sustainable remedy.
Are our schools prepared to handle kids like this?
Generally, no. There was one school district that I found in Massachusetts that was actually making kids with ADHD wear lead vests to weight them down. That's the degree of ignorance that you'll find, and it's really a problem. Plus, schools are torture for kids like this because they require them to sit still for these long periods of time. And a lot of kids with this just can't do it.
So you wrote this book partly to understand what was going on. At the same time, you were applying what you were learning to your relationship with Buzz. Did it help?
That's right. It wasn't exactly a memoir. It was more like a work in progress. And the book became, in a way, the companion I needed because I was feeling so lonely at the time and so overwhelmed. And yes, it helped tremendously. The main thing it helped with was repairing our relationship that was really in crisis.
And I assume you changed as a result.
I think I did. I think that all the neurofeedback and all the meditation made me a much calmer person, and I'm extremely grateful to that. That was a gift that my son gave me.
How old is he now?
He's 15.
He was bar mitzvahed?
How
did you get him through that?
He did incredibly well, and I think the bar mitzvah, the book actually talks about the year leading up to his bar mitzvah, which was a really good timing, I think, if I can say this in retrospect. He mastered this amount of material, and this actually goes to illustrate another point, which is if you have a child like this and he's getting all this negative feedback from the rest of the world, to put him in a situation where he can shine and get this positive feedback, it's priceless.
Well, there are, I'm sure, a lot of people who were ADHD when they were kids, remain ADHD in their adult lives, who have been gone on to successful lives.
That's true. There's some very famous cases of adults with learning disorders who've been very successful. But the longitudinal research shows that the picture on average is not good. There's many more car accidents, crime, all sorts of problems.
And I don't know whether I should end this on this note, but you wrote a very poignant and brave op-ed piece in the New York Times about the mother who murdered her two teenage children.
There was no ADHD in that family.
But why did you feel that needed to be said?
Oh, I absolutely feel, because partly also on the basis of the readers who have been writing to me since my book was published, I know that there's so much stress out there and so much loneliness for parents that we need a lot more help than we're getting.
Catherine Ellison is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist, a former foreign correspondent, and the author of four books. Is this your fifth?
That's my fourth.
This one is called Buzz, A Year of Paying Attention, a memoir, and it's published by Voice, which is an imprint of Hyperion. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks.